Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Better late than never, I hope. Let me just start the program by sending out my undying appreciation and profound thanks to the folks at Microsoft. If you thought you hated Windows 10, you just learned to hate it a little bit more with every update. That was just a delight, that update. I mean, it was a real computer party. Sorry, when you got a great big staff and there's an IT department, and well, you know, they always make sure that the computer's on and ready to roll and all of that stuff all the time. And we try to do that here, but sometimes, well, Microsoft stands in the way. They stand in the way. But better late than never. Thank you, Jeremy in Vermont. Loud and clear on TuneIn. The silence is lifted. Praise the Lord. The Lord. The Lord. Or, yeah. Well, like I said, I'm here at least. And, you know, it's prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and we got some prayer meeting-y stuff. I'm so frustrated right now, I don't even know if I've got time to fool with the shtick of the preacher. I mean, after all, I kind of got shown up for the rank amateur I am on last week's prayer meeting Wednesday with the one dude from Meridian, Mississippi. I can never top that. But anyway, this is the Horn. It's Prayer Meeting Wednesday, the seventh day of December 2016. And I must note that there was a lovely meeting in the Fellowship Hall this evening whilst I was up here wrestling with Windows 10. Brother Deacon Gerald, a chair of the Building and Grounds Committee, notes, in the fellowship hall tonight, pan-fried catfish fillets served up with fried potatoes, all in a cast-iron skillet, of course, corn on the cob from the deep freeze, fresh canned green beans, half-runners, of course, always half-runners, and your choice of from-scratch hush puppies or store-bought dinner rolls. For dessert, fresh-baked apple turnovers with a scoop of store-bought vanilla bean ice cream, washed down with 2 gallons of sweet tea or coffee from that 5-gallon stainless steel percolator that you always see sitting over there on the table in the corner of the fellowship hall. Amen and amen. And, of course, the deacons did what the deacons do. And I wasn't there for when they had to be hustled back through the vestibule and everything, but they are standing by with the heavy brass-bound, blood-red, velvet-lined collection plates. We try to raise $200 every evening at the Horn because we try to raise just enough to keep the bills paid, keep the lights on, the propane bought. Yes, there was a frenzy of propane buying last night because the cold weather's coming. Ha! You know, I thought maybe I was going to get a reprieve this year. I thought maybe whoever that neighbor of mine is that insists on burning coal might have thought better of it, might have gotten some sort of newfangled heat idea system, whatever. But no. The season hath begun. It will continue this way probably until, April. And for all I know, he's burning that coal to make America great again. He's doing his part to bring back the coal industry like Time Magazine's Man of the Year says he'll do and can't possibly. And so the studio here is filling up with the acrid, hellish smell of sulfur and brimstone. Yum, yum. I am informed by Brother Deacon Gerald that the deacons tore through those apple turnovers like fire ants on an antelope carcass. Hoo-wee! I didn't know antelope was that tasty. But, you know, when you're sitting up here wrestling with a damn Windows 10 computer, I can only hope the little old blue-haired ladies save me from some catfish and no store-bought rolls for me. I'll take the homemade hush puppies, please. I know better than to think that there might be an apple turnover or two left. But we do. We try to raise $200 every evening. This evening we need to raise $310. One at $310 or two at $155 or four at $77.50. And after that, my head begins to hurt. So that's where it stands. If you'll hit the PayPal button over at headonradionetwork.com, it'll be mighty helpful. And a reminder, courtesy of Joan in Talibandiana, with time quickly running out, there are 8 days remaining on Joan's new subscriber challenge. Every new subscriber to the Horn, he must have just thrown a new lump of coal on the fire. Just got a particularly evocative blast of hell itself through the windows, past the seals, under the door. Joan in Talibandiana has offered to double the first month's subscription of each and every new subscriber between December 1 and December 15. And we welcome new subscribers as we try to move toward having 100 people at $10 a month, or, ultimately 400 people at $10 a month. It's real easy. Just go to headonradionetwork.com, click on Contribute. Click the little box that says, check the little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. Fill out the requisite information except the part about what you do, where you do it, and why you do it, and who you do it for. And just get to the next screen. Getting to the next screen is half the battle. And there you make your choices about credit cards and PayPal and that kind of stuff. Yeah. If you prefer to use the United States Postal Service, you can always send your checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not made payable to Bob Kincaid, to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And so it's about 26 minutes before the hour. And just a quick note, anytime, unless I'm completely incapacitated or unable to reach the net or anybody, anytime the program's going to be late or there's going to be an interruption or anything like that, let me make this very, very clear. I will always post it to Twitter and Facebook. Okay, it's really not it's really not possible for me to post it to the Horn Facebook page not the Horn Facebook page. It's really not possible for me to post it to the Horn website because that's just a whole nother kettle of fish. but I can send out a single message on Twitter and Facebook, and boom, it goes to both places. And you will automatically, if you follow me, Bob Kincaid, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter or just Bob Kincaid on Facebook, don't just like, you got to follow. Then you'll know when there's an interruption. And you know, just as an added note, I don't just take the night off. I probably take fewer nights away from the microphone as a function of pure pleasure than anybody else doing this work. So just note, if you like and follow me on Twitter and or Facebook, you will always know if there's been an interruption in the program. Okay? Cool. All right, then. It being what? I'm looking at the chat room here. Arthur says, I like how the donation page is optimistic and the default donation option is $1,000. I am not aware of that. Maybe John set that up that way for George Soros. Oh, George! Yeah, but anyway, $310 to go this evening. Meanwhile, by the way, there is a $50 challenge on the table this evening. Courtesy of Ron in the far frozen north. He's put it on the table there. The next 50 bucks that come in get doubled. If they come in, you know, sometimes they don't. Last night was tough. But if they come in, the next $50, well, it gets doubled by Ron in the far frozen north. So thank you very kindly, Ron. Thank you very kindly indeed. Let's see. How about this day in history? Everybody knows what this day is, right? Or have we just forgotten? As Sister Carol Baker points out, on this day in 1941, Imperial Japan attacked America. How things have changed in 75 years. Back then, we fought fascists. Now, we elect them. And that is absolutely true. This is a... This is a disturbing time. It's a worrisome time. If you stop and think about the rise of 21st century fascism, who's going to stop it? 75 years ago when fascism rose up, it rose up in places like Germany, and Italy, and Japan. Some other lesser countries, I guess. Spain. But France and Britain, and the United States and Australia, and Canada. Always Canada. Were there to combine their might, and France really didn't have much after they got rolled over by the Wehrmacht. And the Luftwaffe, and to a certain extent, the Kriegsmarine. But they were able to combine their might to destroy what appears to be, for the time being, a global attempt at making the world a fascist place. Who's going to stop global fascism now that the people who stopped global fascism are the fascists? I think it's a fair question. It's more than a little bit disturbing that the Trump administration is turning into an old generals club. Mattis at Secretary of Defense, who will require a waiver from Congress in order to be able to even take that post, since it's against the law, okay? It is against the law for him to become Secretary of Defense, so the Congress will just have to say, well, the law does not apply to James Mattis. Really, that's what a waiver is. This is a law, but it's not a law for him because he's special. Because the Orange Fuhrer wants him to be Secretary of Defense, therefore let's give him a waiver. And now we find out John Kelly, another Marine general, is going to be National Security Advisor? Or I'm sorry, no, Director of Homeland Security. The other creep, the guy who retweets fake news sex scandal stories about Hillary Clinton, he's going to be the National Security Advisor. And of course, there's General Petraeus, who might wind up being Secretary of State. I mean, the weirdness persists. There's another guy in the mix now, who's really, really creepy, and I'm trying to remember who he is. It'll come to me in due time. But the idea of all these generals sitting in seats of profound power feels kind of, Argentine. And, you know, generals like to think that everything is, you know, that all problems can be solved with a bomb or a gun or whatever. Oh, I know what it is. There's an admiral out there in the running for a spot. There it is. Yeah. Here's a name to just sort of keep in the front of things. Rear Admiral James Ace Lyons. He was a big Trumpansy during the campaign. And he's got some very specific views on how the United States needs to behave in the world. Maybe we should do a little time traveling real quick. It was back during the campaign that Trumpansy retired Admiral James Ace Lyons told a right-wing blatherer, right-wing hate radio guy named John Fredericks. I'm sorry. What? No, this is recent. In fact, like today. No, he told John Fredericks that he sure did love him some Iraq War. And that we might just have to do a little bit more. Get the hockey puck. This guy's a real purity of essence type.
In my view, when people ask me, what do I think about Iraq, I tell them, it's one of the greatest strategic mistakes we ever made. Mm-hmm. Certainly, for not having taken care of the Iranian problem before we went ahead with that. I mean, what we did, we destroyed the Sunni-Shia balance. We should not be involved in the sectarian Sunni-Shia war that has gone on for over 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I can kind of get on board with that. That almost sounds kind of peacenik. But you did notice the part where he said that we should have taken out Iran first. This is not some guy walking around with a daisy in his gun barrel. This is a guy who thinks that we didn't fight enough wars. Did you ever see a Shia drink water, Mandrake?
My view is let them kill each other off,
right.
Number one. And while I'm at that, I might add, we should not embrace anything that approaches the failed coin strategy, which have cost the lives and devastating injuries to many of our military personnel. This idea we had to go out and...
Now, wait, this is where you get a real good bite of the hockey puck. Just take a quick trip around with some duct tape. I've got the good stuff. I've got camo Gorilla tape. But any old duct tape will do. Just kind of make sure it's in there real snug.
March without a protected vest or a blast diagram to show how we want to integrate and win the hearts and minds of the local. What pure nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And my view is when you want to win their hearts and minds, there's one way you do it. In the Middle East, there's only one thing that counts. It's street respect. And the way you get street respect, you kill them into submission. And once you do that, I guarantee you the hearts and minds will follow.
You know, there's only one problem with killing them into submission so that their hearts and minds will follow. Their hearts, after you've killed them into submission, their hearts and minds are kind of dead, aren't they? You kill them into submission. Who do you kill, Admiral? Do you kill 3-year-olds sleeping on a rooftop trying to get a cool breeze in the hot Baghdad summer? Is that who you kill, Admiral, when you're killing them into submission to get street respect? The fuck does Admiral Lyons, I mean, you hear the accent, that doesn't exactly sound like a Fallujah accent. He only knows what he's been told. He only knows what maybe he's read. Yeah, you can kill them into submission by killing a few of their granddaddies and grandmas. And it's not like the grandbabies will miss them. They're buried under the rubble. One night they went to sleep and the house fell on them because a Tomahawk missile fell on the house. Trumpansies, they're a little unsettling. No, they're a lot unsettling. Gerald asks, is that Admiral Elmer Fudd? He sounds like Admiral Elmer Fudd. Be very quiet. We're killing them into submission. It's more than a little bit interesting that Benito Cheeto, during the campaign, said he was smarter than all the generals. And suddenly he's surrounding himself with generals. Oops. Has Wesley Clark gone bowing and scraping to Trump Tower yet? No. Steve in China says, I'm not surprised, actually. Is it martial law because it's a state of mind? Or do we have to wait until boots are on Main Street? Anyway, speaking as one who's been there, too many old war horses in the mix lately. Oh, yeah, it's one of those, if all you have are hammers, all of your problems are going to look like nails sort of situations. It gets a little nervouser and nervouser every day, doesn't it? And today, of course, they had their big farewell session in the United States Senate for Vice President Joe Biden, saying goodbye to him after having known him since 1973. I guarantee you, if he was there, I'm sure Joe Manchin went up and gave him a big old hug. And if he could have, Joe Manchin being Joe Manchin, he would have driven a shiv between his ribs and his back. Because that's what Joe Manchin does. Joe Manchin having declared that it is bullshit that any member of the Democratic caucus in the Senate would talk about holding up the nomination of Alabama Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third as Attorney General. Joe, who has never been accused of being either the sharpest knife in the drawer nor the brightest bulb in the chandelier, said, "Well, I certainly hope we have an Attorney General on January 20th. Joe. There are seldom, if ever, confirmation hearings for presidential appointments on Inauguration Day, you dipshit. I mean, this man is goddamn stupid. But what's worse is his notion that it's bullshit, and that's the word he used in speaking to Politico, that it's bullshit to hold hearings and develop the evidence in the Senate Judiciary Committee, I might add, which is staffed with a whole bunch of lawyers, and Al Franken, who plays the part pretty well. Joe Manchin says it's bullshit that the Senate Judiciary Committee might take the time necessary to hold hearings and put the evidence out there of what an unreconstructed Confederate goddamn racist Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Third is. And he announced that he will be an absolute quisling inside the Democratic Party. That whatever it is the Democrats want to do, Joe Manchin will be there to try to frustrate their intent. The man really is a quisling. No, quisling is not that is not that sub sandwich chain where they run it through the high speed convection oven. A quisling is defined as a collaborator, a traitor, someone who works on the inside of a group to betray its goals and intentions. The word comes from the name of a Norwegian army officer in 1933 who founded the fascist party in Norway named Vidkun Quisling. By 1939, he was sitting down to have beer and Skittles with 6:54 p.m. Adolf Hitler. Damn it, Gerald! Yeah, it was Quisling who encouraged Adolf Hitler to occupy Norway. He was then set up as the head of the puppet government by the German occupying forces. Given that, Quisling? Yeah, that's pretty much Joe Manchin. But it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, so we need to get some Prayer Meeting Wednesday stuff into the mix. People tune in for that. Let's check in with Carl Gallops. Shall we? You probably don't know who Carl Gallops is. Frankly, I don't either. But I suspect in coming weeks and months, we will learn a lot of new fascist names. And as was the case 80, 85 years ago, no small number of those fascists will come from the ranks of the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered religion industry. Mm-hmm. Carl Gallops, by the way, the reason he's in prayer meeting Wednesday, Carl Gallops is a preacher, but not just any preacher. He's one of those, I wish they were odder than they are, but no. Carl Gallops is one of those preachers who threw away everything that Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer ever taught in order to hustle the incoming brave new world of fascism. It was a week ago Monday when Carl Gallops engaged in a conversation with another right-wing talk radio guy, this one in Virginia, by the name of Rob Schilling. And he explained just what it is, glory, hallelujah, praise Jesus, just what it is that the election of Donald Trump means.
Look, there is a great tension right now, a spiritual tension in the world, and it is worldwide, not just in the United States,
yes,
between national sovereignty and globalism. What is globalism? Well, globalism is different than a sovereign nation doing business with the world or cooperating with other nations of the world. That's not...
Do you ever wonder what the qualifications for pronouncements like this are? I mean, has this guy ever sat through, say, Political Science 101, 102, 201, 301? No, he went to Bible college. Just saying. You know, where they, he went to Bible college, where they teach the literal interpretation of the Bible. You know, the one that says that pi equals 3, or that the sun revolves around the earth. Ah?
Not globalism. Globalism says that there needs to be no borders, no sovereignty, no special individual rights, that we are a global community, we need to be under a global head, we need to share all resources equally, et cetera, et cetera. To share all resources.
Okay, so hold on a minute. Globalism, what special rights do you need? And I'm a rights-oriented guy. I'm a civil society kind of person. What special rights do you need, Pastor Gallops? The UN Declaration of Human Rights talks about things like a right to shelter, a right to the ability to be a living person, a right not to be tortured, the right to speak one's mind freely and without fear of repression or reprisal. What special rights does Pastor Gallop want? Ah, I know, I bet you do too. He wants the right to be able to refuse to cater shitty pizza to a gay wedding. He wants the right, globally, to tell women to shut up, hike up their dresses, get on their backs, and, you know, let somebody get to rutting on Mayella and her not be able to do anything about it. He wants the right to populate the planet till the planet till humanity crushes under its own unsustainable weight. Those are the special rights, and that, because that's the kind of code that these right wing asshats talk in. No special rights. A whole world under one head. No borders. No borders. You know what the border of planet Earth is? It's the atmosphere. Once you get past the atmosphere, there aren't any borders. Except the ones that are geographically imposed by things like oceans. I mean, a little over 2,000 years ago, maybe 2,060 years ago or so, the Rhine River, which is a mighty impressive river as rivers go, was a pretty effective border between people east of the Rhine and west of the Rhine. But the Germanii had been getting a little, probably shouldn't say froggy, had been getting a little full of themselves and raiding the Gallic tribes west of the Rhine. So Gaius Julius Caesar, took his legions over to the edge of the Rhine where the Germans were on the other side going, and, you know, flipping the bird. And, yeah, come and get us. Yeah, yeah, you with the toothbrush on your head. Yeah, fuller brush, man. Yeah, yeah, und yummy. And Caesar, having an army and having being Romans and understanding essential elements of engineering for his day, said, fuck this. We're going to build a bridge across the Rhine. And his legion said, if he says we are, we are. And he did. And he took his legions across the Rhine and gave the Germans there a righteous stomping and turned around and marched right back. Just to sort of let them know that there weren't any borders. The development of the intercontinental ballistic missile put the idea of borders pretty much to bed, too. And then, of course, there's September the 11th, 2001, of which Kinda Sleazy Rice, goes great with Kinda Sleazy Chicken, said, we could never imagine that people, that terrorists would use planes as missiles. Except for the fact that they'd already imagined that during a certain political summit in, you know, Italy. Right. When you hear assholes like this follower of Christ talk about, well, one world government means there ain't no borders, what he means is, he wants to be able to stop people he doesn't like from coming into places that he doesn't think they should be. And, of course, this is nothing but pure white colonial bigotry, because the entire definition of humanity is one long migratory pattern all over the globe. Hey, when the last glaciation happened, what was the first thing human beings did? I mean, it's a glacier. It's a couple of miles thick. It's not a nice place to be. But hey, if we get up the glacier, we can walk along the glacier and go somewhere we've never been before. Hello, population of the Americas. I guess Pastor Gallops would have liked to have had a hard border for that, too. But you know what? When a glacier doesn't suffice as a hard border, when a glacier is not enough to stop the drive that comes as a result of human curiosity and determination, Yeah, so much for borders. Because I'm sure, you know, Pastor Gallup's is more than okay with any white people that want to come to America. It's just the idea that this part of the continent would be repopulated by the brownish sort of terracotta-skinned human beings who lived here for thousands of years in the first place. That's what gets his maiden forms in a twist. But that's enough for me. Let's get back to Pastor Gallup's and find out what it is that why it is he's so worried about globalism. Globalism! Fluoride mandrake and little children's ice cream.
All resources equally, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, a one-world government system. Now, as odd as that sounds to some people, as conspiracy theory as that sounds to some people, we have to...
Or as humane and decent as it sounds to some other people, in light of the fact that the only reason the United States and people in the developed world eat and live the way they do is because there's a whole lot of human beings on other parts of the planet who don't hardly get to eat nothing at all. See, did you notice his reference of, you know, let's go back for a moment.
We have to come to grip to be under a global head. We need to share all resources equally.
We need to share all resources equally. None of that equality for the follower of the Prince of Peace, where the first shall be last and the last shall be first. Huh, how about that? That's actually in their book, The First Shall Be Last and the Last Shall Be First. That sounds like kind of equality. That sounds like there is no first and last. It's all middle. Yeah, this guy's a real Lulu. But who is it? Who is it that's why is it? How is it that this idea of globalism is that must be so spectacularly and Christ-likely opposed, even though it's not Christ-like? Where does that come from?
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, a one-world government system. Now, as odd as that sounds to some people, as conspiracy theory as that sounds to some people, we have to come to grips with the facts that that globalism spirit is strong in our world. It is powerful in our world, and it is demonically driven. How do I know it's demonically driven? Because the Bible says so, Rob. The Bible speaks.
The Bible says so. Because the Bible tells me so. You know, but again, the Bible also says it's okay for a couple of teenage girls to get their daddy liquored up and, you know, ride him like a borrowed mule so they can get pregnant because they're not ever going to get married because all the men got nuked over in Sodom and Gomorrah because their daddy couldn't stop Almighty God from killing everybody. The Bible also says it's okay to take your wife down to Egypt and pimp her out to Pharaoh and tell him, oh, she's my sister. Mm-hmm. Just saying. Yeah, the Bible also doesn't explain why it rains. You know.
Rob, the Bible speaks of the last days before the return of Christ, that this globalism will eventually win out, at least for a while.
No, actually it doesn't. I've read the Bible a number of times. There's not a goddamn word in there about globalism, least of which the word globalism is not in there. This is just another miserable, power-mad fuckwit who wants to religiously control the entire world. Because, see, here's the fun part. He can talk all he wants about how he needs borders and blah, 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 and he's against one world government. But if this man had the power, he would compel every human being on the planet to believe in Jesus Christ just like he does. I don't mean it's okay for them to just believe in Jesus Christ. They have to believe in Jesus Christ the way he says they have to believe in Jesus Christ. I mean, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough enough sell for, say, the Hindus, whose religion is way lots older than either Judaism or Christianity or Islam. It's going to be a tough nut to sell. But to turn them into Baptists, good luck with that. But anyway, there was something about the Antichrist, wasn't there?
And there will be a global governor, if you will. We know him as the lawless one, the son of perdition, the abomination that causes desolation, the Antichrist. All of those terms are in the scriptures for this one that will eventually proclaim himself to be God. And people will
shut up.
They will be forced to take a mark identifying who they are, all in the name of peace and security and safety.
Okay, took a minute. Apparently the mouse is slow with the new super-duper double-secret probation Windows 10 upgrade. You caught that part in there about how the Antichrist is referred to as the lawless one? Didn't I mention a little bit ago that it's gonna the law says that James Mattis cannot be Secretary of Defense because he's been out of the military for less than 7 years? Right. So Trump is actually being a lawless one when he appointed James Mattis. Right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Arthur just sent me a message. Donald Trump, the lawless one? Yes. We have laws in this country that say that the president cannot use the power of his office to directly enrich himself or his businesses. And that's why the businesses of the business of the president gets sold off and managed in a blind trust. And, you know, other officials as well. But Trump's not going to do that. Trump's just going to hang on to his business and tell Ivanka to run everything. And that's what he said he's going to do. The lawless one. He's a climate change denier, which is going to have catastrophic consequences for the struggle of this planet. Well, not the planet. Come on, Bob. We've talked about that. For the struggle of humanity to survive on this planet. And there are going to become places where humans cannot survive. Those places will be known as desolation. And the guy who denies climate change will be the bringer of desolation. Hey, Pastor Gallups, you want to rethink that whole Antichrist thing again, buddy? There's even a passage in some part of the apocalypse that says that he will be wounded in the head. Granted, they didn't know about spirochetes back then, but when your brain looks like a baby Swiss from the spirochetes burrowing through it, and come on, this guy has spent his entire life sticking his schmeckle where it didn't have any business being. You can't tell me that he hasn't picked up a little here and there. He's making a pretty, now that I think about it, Pastor Gallus is making a pretty convincing case. Do continue, brother.
One, the son of perdition, the abomination that causes desolation, the Antichrist. All of those terms are in the scriptures for this one that will eventually proclaim himself to be God, and people will worship him all over the globe. In fact, they will be forced to take a mark identifying who they are.
You mean like when they have to, when they walk around with their Make America Great Again hats on? And that way they all know who they are and they know that each other can trust the other? As Barkway points out, the Attorney General of Oklahoma, a clown named Pruitt, Steve Pruitt, was named to be the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency today. Steve Pruitt is a notorious climate change denier. His denial of climate change will bring on desolation. Can't help but make you wonder, at least just a little bit. I mean, it does me, doesn't it, you?
All in the name of peace and security and safety.
Because who wants that?
There will be a one-world economic system, apparently, from what the scriptures seem to outline. A one-world religious system, if you will. And it almost has to be in order to...
Never mind that the word economy doesn't appear in the scripture.
So, you know, people just need to come to grips with the fact that this is the word of God that says this. Again, not some conspiracy theory, not tinfoil hat wearing idiots, but the word of God says that this is the thing, the predominant spirit of the last days. So we see that spirit really rising. We saw it in the last national election here. We watched it with Brexit. We're watching it around the world. We're watching the powers that be vying for power in the Middle East. We're watching it with ISIS and the civil war in Syria and Russia and China and the Ottoman Empire reemerging through Turkey. I mean, we're watching this globalist...
Wait, stop. The Ottoman Empire is re-emerging through Turkey? They've already got Constantinople. What is this? Is this dipshit saying that they're going to that Turkey's going to be at the gates of Vienna again? Holy mackerel! And what's his beef when he says that there's only going to be one economy? As far as I can tell, that's not the case. And the idea of one world government is as out of reach now as it has ever been. Because people tend to band together in like-minded groups. It's going to be a tough sell creating one world government in, you know, India. Especially considering how they're going to have one world government with their bosom buddies, the Pakistanis and the Bangladeshis. Oh, that's going to be a lovely time. And you know who's really going to love being in a one world government? The Saudis, alongside the Iranians. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Israelis? Oh, they're going to love them some one-world government. I'm sure they're just itching to jump into a one-world government with Jordan. Hell! The Irish and the Northern Irish, they're just going to jump at that one-world government now, aren't they? Damn fool. But the damn fool is a damn dangerous fool into the bargain. Because now that we're about halfway through the clip, he's going to jump into what he thinks it all means. Because that's where we were headed under the Kenyan Muslim usurper. We were going to go into a one world government. No telling who was actually going to run it, but, well, maybe the Kenyan Muslim usurper. Or maybe Ban Ki-moon, the UN General Secretary, who can't even... Well, never mind. Damn it, get back to it. Come on, buddy. Man, I just love me some Windows 10. You can't... Na, 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 na. Yeah, that kind of grabbed angry, too. The Ottomans? Really? Which nations exactly is Turkey thinking of invading and occupying? Occupied Palestine? Syria? Lebanon? Israel? Right. So, you know, but it's not the religious thing here. It's the fact that, well, it is kind of the religious thing. Carl Gallup has the ear of a whole bunch of simpletons to whom, well, he sounds to a stupid person what a smart person sounds like. Does that make sense? Yeah, maybe. So anyway, let's get back to our buddy Carl. Carl! Yeah, cowbell for anybody knows where Carl comes from.
Is a great tension right now, a spiritual tension in the world, and it is worldwide, not just in the United States,
yes,
between national sovereignty and globalism. What is globalism? Well, globalism is different.
No, we've been down this road.
So we see that spirit really rising. We saw it in the last national election here. We watched it with Brexit. We're watching it around the world. We're watching the powers that be vying for power in the Middle East. We're watching it with ISIS and the civil war in Syria and Russia and China and the Ottoman Empire reemerging through Turkey. I mean, we're watching this globalist desire for a one-world order. And now, the United Nations has what they are calling Agenda 2030. My book outlines it.
There's a book to hustle. Of course there's a book to hustle.
Specifically from the United Nations documents. Again, not conspiracy theory websites, but right from the documents of the United Nations. And Agenda 2030, just to give a little bit about it, it's called Sustainable Growth Agenda. And that is, they're concerned about, you know, overpopulation and the overuse of world resources and
You notice the dismissive tone he uses? Oh, they're worried about overpopulation. John wins. Yeah, John in North Carolina stay and wins. Wait a minute, I said there was a cowbell involved. Yeah. Carl comes from llamas with hats. If you've never seen it, take a moment on YouTube. Just look up llamas with hats. Worth your time. Along with Charlie the Unicorn, which, you know, probably a decade old now, but it's still an awesome, awesome thing. Carl!
Global warming and all of these things, but tucked away in the middle of it, it literally says that by the year 2030, the United Nations goal, and whether they pull this off or not is up to the Lord, whether he allows it. But the bottom line is their goal is to, quote, have every man, woman, and child on the planet marked. That's their words. Identified. That's their words.
Okay, it's either marked or it's identified. Carl! Now, see, he's thinking all number of the beast thing here. And you know the funny thing? If everybody has to get a tattoo of the flying spaghetti monster on their forehead, the back of their hand, or the back of their neck, or, you know, down there where the tramp stamps go, they're going to figure out a way to say, well, see, look, the noodles form the numbers 666. Actually, what the UN is talking about, and it is absolutely unrelated to any of this babbleous horse shit that Carl Gallup's is babbling about. What they're talking about is the ability for every citizen, for every human being on this planet to enjoy the rights of citizenship in a nation. Because if everybody is a citizen of somewhere, then it becomes a lot more difficult to declare people non-persons. You see? There's nothing nefarious in that. It's actually an attempt to provide a degree of security to people who otherwise have none. Meanwhile, with regard to the mark, Jennifer asks, how long before MAGA tattoos, Make America Great Again, start up? I'm pretty sure there's plenty of people with Make America Great. Remember the guy who got the Willard Romney tattoo back in 2012? Like, got it on his neck or something, or his face? Or I think he got it on his face. Jennifer continues, I'm a student of Krav Maga. Maga translated from Yiddish means combat, or in these people's case, K-O-M-B-A-T. The Make America Great Again tattoos are already out there. I guarantee you, I could walk into any tattoo parlor in West Virginia and find a tattoo artist. Oh yeah, I've already done a couple dozen of them. Most of them like it done in that high German looking all caps Gothic script. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa says, Brother Deacon Gerald, I get you deacons confused. You all look alike to me. I wish we could just get this goddamned one world government shit over with. With all the agenda and things, I say bring it on. So these dipshits will have to find something else to conspire about. Or at least, you know, give them... But see, these are punks, okay? These are bullies. They never fight anybody their own size. They always go after things that aren't real. Yeah, by God, I'm going to go in and shoot me up a pizza parlor to stop John Podesta from a raping of the little children and taking their bloody bodies up to Hillary for her to eat for dinner. Yeah, make America great again. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Go in there with a freedom protector and my banana blade. Some people call it a sling blade, but I call it a banana blade. Yeah. So, I mean, that's... he's almost done. I promise he is.
For the goals of peace, safety, security, world peace. That's their words. So, I mean, those words and those thoughts and those ideas come straight from the scriptures. And they're not good things. They're demonically inspired things, according to the Word of God. And now we have the United Nations boldly declaring that this is their goal. And they have united themselves with several technology companies, biotech companies, to make this marking system work. And 2030 is only, what, 12 years away from now? 13 years away? And, I mean, we're right around the corner from that. But right after this last U.S. presidential election, since Donald Trump won and since he declares that he is for national sovereignty and not globalism, the United Nations, on the day that it was announced that Donald Trump was the clear winner, the United...
Because, see, that hasn't been announced yet, and Carl Gallups is still a liar. He hasn't been announced to be the clear winner. The only way he can be any kind of a winner at all at this point is for the Electoral College to declare him the winner. Because he cannot be declared the winner of the popular vote, because he's down something like 2.6 million votes. I mean, he really got his ass handed to him in the popular vote. That's a butt-kicking. 2.6 million votes. But, you know, this man's a follower of Christ. The truth ain't in him.
The nations went into session, and this was in mainstream media headlines. Rob, they went into session and declared that they were stepping up their 23rd agenda deadline. They didn't, I don't think they set a date, but they were saying, we got to step this up. And now that was a panic response to a national sovereignty guy, and we'll see if he is. That's what he claims he is. We'll see. But that was their panicked response. Why? Because this globalist spirit is thick in the world right now.
Oh, shut up. And you realize the only reason he says this stuff, he doesn't give a damn whether somebody in Dakar has clearly delineated citizenship. He couldn't care less. What he cares about is keeping the simple worked up enough to keep sending him money. And we didn't play the offertory hymn this evening, but let's remember, and it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Right? Yeah. Hey, let's check in on fundraising. Thanks very kindly to Randy. He said, I'll take that challenge, and met Ron in the Far Frozen North challenge, meaning that Randy doubled his money. And thanks very kindly to Rob. Thank you, Rob, for jumping in. That means that we've raised $120 this evening out of the $310 we've got to go. Quick ciphering. We got $190 to go in fundraising to finish the evening. Right? Yeah, I think so. 120, 220. Yep, $190 to go in fundraising. Hopefully we will knock that down. Robert in Australia, subject line, end of days and the Antichrist. Bob, wasn't the year 2000 meant to be the end of days? Well, they said it was, but then they kind of had to change things. Then was it sometime in 2008 or 2009? Some preacher predicted it. Yeah, that same too. But, you know, you just revise. And wasn't President Obama supposed to be the Antichrist? Well, you know, a majority of New Jersey Republicans said they weren't sure that he wasn't. And I think we can extrapolate that to the rest of the country, too. It never ends with these people, does it? Says Robert. No, it doesn't. Because their followers have no memory of what was said only last week. Not just that, but because it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Shum dibalapa. Bibalak snakemanikwa. Hallelujah. Heck. Had to work one in there for the evening. I mean, come on. People expect it of me. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, if you want to jump into the chat room, we've got a lovely group in there this evening. Good evening, Anatole and Barkway, Don from Central PA, Earther and Golden Thunder and Jug of Punch and Jules and Labor Man and Snork and Steve from Georgia Stan and Stockton Larry and VT Blom, whole bunch of folks, and they would be more than happy to see you. Sparky's taking Wednesday nights off. He just can't cope with the that anymore, and I understand it. I got to keep it going because y'all look forward to it, but I get a little wore out on it too myself. And let's run over and check in real quick with Tracy and see what's happening out on the 6 and 7/8. Hey, Tracy.
Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Okay, good. I'm on the 405, not the 6 and 7/8.
Not the 7 2/3?
7 2/3, and hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Are you on the speaker or something, or on the Bluetooth?
Yeah, because I don't know what's happening with my Bluetooth. Normally, I mean, if it's scratchy or if it sounds stupid, then I'll just put you on. I'm talking to you through the radio. So you tell me how it sounds, and then I'll figure something else out. If
it's okay. There's a little bit of clacky noise going on.
That's the speed. That's my car.
That's the meter, isn't it?
That's the meter. Clicking, click, 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 click. So, there's so many things to talk about. I mean, I was trying to call yesterday, but you and Angry were doing so well that I couldn't get in. I had to go because I had people over. I started a home study group for my church.
Yeah.
So, hey, and so I made homemade chili. You know, crock pot chili, and it was, you know, with the stewed tomatoes and.
Oh yeah, yeah. Hurt me. Just do it. Just get it. Yeah.
Do you guys have excellent chili? The chili, like the chili con carne and a block that you cut up and you can make, you know, like, you know.
In your grocer's freezer section.
Well, it's at our Kroger's. I mean, at our Rouse's in the deli meat section.
No, I have never heard of this.
Oh,
I would buy a lot of it if it was available. Right now, I'm just grieving. You know, I told you about the age Tavardi. Yeah, it's gone from my Kroger now. I can't get it anymore.
And I can look at it up behind. I'm sorry. Yep, another reason why I leave California.
Yeah, rub it in. So no, I can't get that chili. About the only chili I can get in the grocery store comes in cans that are labeled things like Armour and Campbell's, and it all sucks.
No, this is a brick. So what you do, it's amazing. It tastes basically probably as close to if you went to a Nathan's or somewhere and got a chili cheese dog.
Okay.
It's kind of like that consistency. But then I mix it in, what I did was I got stew meat. And so, you know, I have the Ninja crock pot, which is awesome, because when the settings of the dial is stovetop, so you can actually, you know, brown your meat for the crock pot in the crock pot, well, the Ninja. So, of course, I did, you know, with the onions and the garlic. And the stewed tomatoes and the diced tomatoes and all that. And then I threw in the chili brick and let that cook for like 8 hours. But what I realized when I, you know, on like hour six of the cooking, I'm looking and I'm like, oh crap, I didn't buy enough meat. So then I'm like, okay, do I go to the store? But no, I actually had cube steak in the freezer and some ground beef. So I just threw that stuff in the skillet, browned it up. There's a chili seasoning and some more tomatoes, and threw that in. Man,
that sounds like one big ass crock pot.
It's huge. It's about 8 quarts, if not 10.
That's like a community crock pot, right? Yeah.
It's pretty big. It's definitely made for entertaining. It's a wondrous thing.
Well,
if
we ever get our kitchen back in proper working order, I miss making chili this time of year. Oh, I do. I've talked about it before, making the chili sauce from scratch with the dried chilies rehydrated and running them through the Foley food mill and coming up with the chili paste and adding in the beef juices from the roasted brisket of beef and shredding the brisket and the tomatoes and the garlic and the chili peppers and the onions and the mushrooms. Got to have mushrooms.
I've never thought about mushrooms and chili.
Oh no, and if you're cooking for your vegetarian friends, a liberal dosing of mushrooms will along with some like the really firm tofu, it's meaty chili.
Really?
Yeah, it's one of the few things I do. I can make a badass vegetarian chili.
Well, it would have to be badass in order for me to eat tofu.
Yeah, the tofu just takes on the flavor of everything around it.
Actually, you know what?
Tastes like chicken.
I used to do a mean tofu stir fry with sesame seed chili and garlic oil. And I would brown the tofu, you know, I would marinate it in soy sauce and teriyaki sauce. And then I would, you know, fry it in with the garlic and all that.
Yeah, and it just takes on the flavor of whatever it's put around. It's like who are those shapeshifters on Star Trek? There's our Star Trek reference for the evening. So. tofu is the shapeshifter of food.
Yes, it is. And see, the thing is, I'm trying, you know, to eat. I try so hard to eat healthy, but then temptation, you know. So yeah, yesterday, because like I said, I was having people over, and I'm like, I didn't know if they had eaten or anything, but I said, well, even if they have, I'll get dessert. And again, for it to be store-bought, wait, let me say it right, store-bought.
Damn it.
What?
No, it's all right, just keep going. Continue where, from where you were.
Snowball.
Yes.
I got a vanilla cake from Ralph's, right?
Right.
That had like a kind of a glaze over it. Not a frosting, but a glaze.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then I bought the Kroger double vanilla bean ice cream. And we, but nobody wanted it. So I'm like, damn it, because I only bought. Do they do in your neck of the woods? Do they do the half cakes in the bakery section, or do they do the whole cake?
No, you can get a half a cake. You can.
Okay, so I was praying that everybody would eat the half cake, because if I bought a whole cake, I knew everybody would eat the whole cake. Did I say whole cake or whole cake?
No, you know that's subject to later interpretation by the podcast listeners.
Okay, for the podcast, I said whole cake.
Okay. Because Ho got to eat too.
But Ho's got to eat too.
I know. So, hey! But I got to tell you, it's not often I get to one up you.
But I got
you beat.
Come on, please.
Yeah, I know. Come harder, don't come at all.
Right.
So, went to meet up with Boss Man Wayne the other day.
Cool. And I heard him on the radio. I thought Boss Man Wayne seriously was a figment of your imagination. That he was just a character. I'm like, oh, good. So Bob isn't simple. Boss Man Wayne does exist. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Boss Man Wayne is the reason for this whole network. Are you kidding me?
No, he was awesome. I was in my car going, wow, he does exist.
It's a little Christmas miracle, Tracy.
Yes, Virginia, there is a Boss Man Wayne.
So packages arrived, and one particular package arrived from Germany, from Chris in Germany.
Uh-oh, what was in it? Come on, now you got my interest peaked.
She sent us a classic Weihnachtsmarkt Dresdener Stollen.
Back at you. What the hell? What'd you call me?
Stollen, Stollen.
Stollen.
Is the German version of fruitcake. Only it's not icky like, you know, Claxton fruitcake in a box that they sell at the Hickory Farms kiosk this time of year. It's full of juicy, rehydrated fruit with this light, I mean, not light like angel food, but it's not dense and dark like fruitcake, and it's all covered with this powdered sugar frosting. And it's dense, and it is heavenly. And along
dense like Republican dense?
No, dense like substantial, like doesn't fall apart.
Okay.
But it's also kind of flaky inside, as if the cake batter or the cake dough has been folded repeatedly on itself like steel in a samurai sword.
Man, you sure have a purty little mouth. You sure do have a way. You talk better than a $20 whore.
Oh, it is something magnificent. And alongside this came these little sort of gingerbread cookies called Liebkuchen. Oh no, we've lost Tracy. No, we haven't. There's Tracy. Liebkuchen.
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
And then there was this little bag. Of like shortbread that was stuffed with little tiny shortbreads stuffed with orange marmalade, and as quick as the little tie came off of that bag, they disappeared like vapor in like water, like fog in sunlight. Oh, it's been bad. It's been bad around here.
No, I feel you, because since nobody ate the cake yesterday. You know, there was still cake in my house. Now, here's the first part. The first part, how it started going wrong was I was talking to my mom, and I told her I made the chili. And I said, when I come home from my school run, I was going to scramble up some eggs. And then she's like, you're going to put chili on top of that? I'm like, of course. So then I get home, and the missus is like, huh, mommy? She calls me mommy. I feel really icky when she does it, but I love her. She's like, can you make me breakfast? And so I made an omelet with the chili, you know, and I don't really do well with omelets. A lot of times they go horribly wrong, but actually this one turned out okay because, you know, I warmed up the chili. I put the chili in the middle of the omelet with the cheese and the onions, and then I folded the omelet, and I didn't tear it up. I was shocked. And then I put more, you know, served it with more chili and onions on top. Oh, so that was the first, that was the first sin. You know, when we're talking about this deadly sin of gluttony. So that was the first part. This was a two-parter. So, of course, that put Jan in a coma, in a food coma, because the omelet was the size of the plate. So then, okay, so she's, and I was on the phone with my friend talking about cake. And she heard me talk in her sleep, in her slumber. She's talking in her sleep and saying, "Mommy, I want cake and ice cream." And so then, of course, I had, and I was trying so desperately not to eat the cake, Bob. But the cake was there.
Did okay, so what you're saying is you tried and you failed.
I tried. But so the cake was calling, so I did the cake, and it was really fluffy. And for Snowball, it was really good cake. And then on top of that, we had the vanilla ice cream. And did I forget about the did I mention the chocolate syrup and the whipped cream and the maraschino cherries?
No, you didn't. But, you know, you did.
But I did.
Sounds pretty damn decadent.
You know, and this is the thing. And then I whine about my ass. And the fact that it's spreading to epic proportions.
Now let's be careful with the TMI part of the program here.
Oh, shut up, Bob.
I mean, just saying, not saying.
The girth, you know, that I am, you know, widening as we speak. But I'm like, okay. And it's like, you know, I'm trying, you know, it's my own fault because I buy this stuff. And I, you know, I could have just went into the cold-blooded part about the cake, the bakery section, Bob, at my Ralph's is right next to the produce section. Okay? So I could have just made a fruit salad. You know, I live in California. We can still get decent
fruit. Or, you know, maybe, you know, some, like, jicama slaw with Brussels sprout chunks.
Okay, well...
Yeah, because that's so much every bit as awesome as cake.
Right. Yeah. Jicama slaw and Brussels sprouts. Yummy. No, not quite as awesome. But enough of the food porn. So I have to... You and Jewel had a great conversation the other day, and I want to comment on something that she said about... How, and I don't want to misquote, but you guys are kind of going back and forth about the Trump pansies, and she was convinced that there's not as many of them as people are saying, and you were like, I don't think so, because refresh my memory, was that the gist of the conversation, and you were like, no, there's, you know, you guys still talk about how, you know, how you realize. You knew how racist it is in this country, but you just weren't prepared for just how racist this country is. Was that the gist of the conversation?
Yeah, pretty much. I think we just have a difference of opinion. I think Jules is more,
right.
Jules is more still willing to reach out the hand, and you know, and she doesn't think that
back of bloody stuff.
Well, she doesn't think Trumpansies voted for Trump. She thinks that, well, what she said was that they really just didn't know about grab 'em by the pussy and about all the Mexicans are rapists and they're not sending their best people and the Trumpansies just went out there and voted for Trump because they never, ever, 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 ever heard any of that.
I can't get through with that because, see, and I'm going to say it, and this is that protected by white privilege kind of thing. And I'm going to talk about how, the, you know, when you're protected by white privilege, it's, oh, you can see that. You can see how, because you want to see the best. You want to say, no, it can't be this bad. These people didn't vote for him, even though, because they couldn't have voted for him, knowing everything that he said, that just isn't possible. But it is. Because we're still having black being shot in the street. We're still having, you know, my son being attacked. I was talking to a woman the other day. I was waiting for somebody for food, it was a sister. She was, her son is a DA with the, you know, the LA County District Attorney's Office. Has his license plate says that. He got pulled over, Bob, by white cops, made to get out of his car and sat on the curb, and his license plate said, there's something on his license plate that basically says, you know, I'm a member of the District Attorney's Office. Don't mess with me. Right? But no, it doesn't matter. He was a black man driving a nice car. And what, how dare... See, I live in a world where it's the how dare you. How dare you, being a black person, have anything nice. And white people can't handle it. We can't... And it's not like this is anything new. Look back in Black Wall Street in Oklahoma, or any of the towns back in the day where they had the race riots, where it was white people tearing up black communities because they deigned to be self-sufficient. Look at how many black men were lynched just because they had the audacity to open their own stores and serve their communities. So this is the world that we live in. This is nothing new. So the Trump pansies were elated. They actually have somebody that they can vote for, that they can be themselves. They don't have to worry about political correctness. They don't have to worry about, you know, possibly losing their jobs or if they say anything the wrong thing, because Trump is the president now. They have an outlet. We don't have to worry. They don't have to worry anymore about Black Lives Matter because Jefferson Beauregard Davis Sessions III, or the third, is going to be the Attorney General, a man who called a black co-worker boy, and you better know your place.
And here's a fun one. I may have not mentioned this one before, Tracy, but Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, among other things, he once, in a fit of pique, threw down his file folder in a heated argument about civil rights cases in the U.S. Attorney's Office, and he threw his folder down and said, "I wish I could decline all of them." He don't want to bring no civil rights cases.
Absolutely. So, no, I'm sorry, Jules, because, you know, I've lived in this skin for 50 years. And as my mother before me, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, my great-great-grandmother, and all before them, we have lived in this skin and lived in this country. We know what people are capable of. And like Angry was talking about...
Well, this is some news. Just to give you an idea, so it went out a while back, the administration of Texas A&M University.
Oh, God, that, yeah.
It developed that an outside group had rented one of their facility rooms for Richard Spencer, the neo-Nazi white supremacist that led Heil Trump. Yeah, that guy. Well, he spoke down at Texas A&M University. And it happened, it went down this week. It went down last night.
Yep.
He was invited to Texas A&M by a former student there named Preston Wiginton.
Wait, Preston what?
Wiginton. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Texas A&M denounced his appearance. They said he does not represent what Texas A&M stands for. When, of course, you know, Texas A&M, well, he wouldn't be speaking at Texas A&M if there wasn't an audience at Texas A&M for him. Here's the interesting part. A reporter named Jeff Paul went to get on to the Wi-Fi at the event. And just warning coming up. That word is about to make an appearance in the program, and I'm sorry, but you know, this is journalism. This isn't opinion.
And you know what though? Like you said, I want to emphasize what you said about the about saying nigga and printing it with the asterisks and all that. No, I want you to write exactly what they said, and I want you to say exactly what they said. Forget the N-word and saying the N-word and typing in asterisks and all that. Say it. I want you to hear. I want y'all to hear it. I want you to see and hear. So go ahead.
So when Jeff Paul went to get on the Wi-Fi at the Richard Spencer event, one of the Wi-Fi networks available to him was Nigger Genocide in all caps.
Wow. How awesome. So what was the password, Nigato?
It doesn't appear to be password protected.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the rest of them are things like TAMU Visitor, Copy Corner, Copy Corner MSC, Copy Corner Guest. There was another Wi-Fi network called W8000_2488. There was another one that was a pair of Ys with umlauts over them. And then the third listed Wi-Fi network down was Nigger Genocide.
Did he do a screenshot of that?
The story's over at Raw Story, and there's a screenshot there. The headline is Nigger Genocide. Of course, they used an asterisk. Reporter finds hateful Wi-Fi name at Texas A&M white nationalist event. Of course, shame on Raw Story for using the phrase white nationalist instead of what they are, white supremacists.
I can't say it.
Ku Klux Klansman.
Thank you, because it's
Klansman without the sheets.
Right, exactly.
Richard, in speaking to the group, Richard Spencer said, whether it was nice or not, and I'm not going to deny, there was a lot of brutality that went along with it. We won. This country belongs to white people.
Mm-hmm.
Trump was the first step toward white identity politics in the United States. He is not going to be the last. The alt-right is a new beginning.
Uh-huh.
That's some serious economic anxiety there.
You know, these economically anxious motherfuckers, you. I can't be bothered. I can't. And again, this is the world that we live in. Black, and like Angry was saying last night, the schizophrenia that black people, I'm surprised more of us aren't. I've had, you know, most of my mental health issues have been because of trying to fit into this country, to try to be a good Negro, to try to be, you know, one of the good ones, because you don't want to be considered one of the bad ones. But it shows that it doesn't matter how much money you have, who you are. It doesn't matter if you're black in this country. You are damned and damned to being in second class. It's like what, you know, he was saying, you know, how Trump was saying that all black people's lives are hell and we live in the ghetto. Baby, I live in Encino. I got a 3-bedroom house with a living room, kitchen, and den, and a backyard in Encino. I'm not by any means, we're not rich, but we're not struggling. We're okay. I'm just American, you know, but there are still these people who feel that I don't deserve to live there. How dare I bring my happy black butt with my Jewish wife into their lily white neighborhoods? It's like, you know, Angry was talking about how there's certain parts in Orange County prides themselves are being mostly white. That's why, in a, you know, is a city within Orange County has declared themselves a sanctuary city. Did you hear about that?
Yes. That's got to be a, that's got to go over fun.
It's gonna be awesome. They're like, look, it's one of those things like we've been saying about California. You know, as much as it would hurt some of us if, to take away some of this federal money, if you really are going to, but see, here's a good thing about, you know, Trump's, you know, threats about taking away federal money. We're not the only, you know, the gay people, black people, Hispanic people aren't the only ones that that would hurt. It's like back when they were doing the stupid sequester and they were cutting people's food stamps and the Walmart people like, yo, 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 pump your brakes. You're keeping money out of our pockets. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So the power brokers are, you can talk about that crap you, that you want and say you're going to keep money out of California. Try it. And see what happens. You know, it's like what you, but then again, we're dealing with crazies. You know, we're dealing with that cut your nose, cut up your nose to spite your face mentality. Because, that, you know, what other explanation is there? You know, that's why I was, that's why when Jules was saying, no, these people didn't realize. I said, yes, they did. They realized exactly what he was saying, exactly who he is. But the question is now, what are they going to do with it? Like those rural communities in Kentucky that are now concerned and worried about whether or not they're going to still have their Medicaid, because why? Like you said last night, with one fell swoop of, you know, signature of a pen, he could say Obamacare is gone. And like you said, says it in the Senate, goes to the House, and it's done. There's no intricacies in this. There's no, you know, we're not talking rocket science. It's going to, do you really think that he's not going to get rid of Obamacare, Bob?
Well, again, it's a case of take them at their word.
Right.
Mitch McConnell announced yesterday that job one, the minute the new Congress is sworn in, is to repeal the Affordable Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Not repeal and replace, not repair, not amend,
get rid of.
But to repeal. And as I tried to explain last night, Tracy, it's a hell of a lot easier to pass a one-sentence bill than it is to pass a 2,000-page bill. And the one-sentence bill simply says, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is hereby entirely, completely, totally, and unqualifiedly repealed, period. All in favor in the Senate, aye. All in favor in the House, aye. And they hand it up, and they hand it up to Benito Chito, and he signs it in his orange crayon and says, and writes under it, America is already great again.
Meanwhile, back at the fort, how many people are going to be kicked off of medical, off of Obamacare at that point?
Tens of millions.
And because, and then they're going to start crying. Well, I didn't know. Yes, because again, like you said, take them at their word. Take them at their word.
Well, what kind of sense of denial are we involved in if we don't?
It's called, well, you know what? I think I talked to you about this. It's called cognitive dissonance, because it's like, you know it's wrong. That's, but you have to, there's this book, and I'll send you a copy of it. It's called Post-Traumatic Slave Disorder. And this woman is brilliant. She basically writes about how, why you have to make people inhuman, because then, because if they're human, then you're like, wait, we can't do this. So if you just make, like, how you turn soldiers into troops,
look at what Richard Spencer said in College Station, Texas. Oh, I'm not going to say there wasn't some brutality involved, but we won. Right. America is a white nation. Well, what about the non-white people who did all the work for the white folks? The Capitol building was not built by Messrs. Jefferson, Adams, Franklin, and Hamilton and Washington. They didn't get their little lily white hands dirty. Even Bill O'Reilly says, "Well, yeah, it was built with slave labor, but they ate real good."
And let's not forget about the railroads, Bob. How many Asian men were shanghaied over here to build the railroads?
Sure. And black folks. Look, the crew that my great grandfather ran was him, who was a section boss, and his entire crew was black.
Exactly. And then what about the Hispanic folks that are here now picking your tomatoes and your lettuce and your strawberries?
Oh, but see, they're taking jobs that white Americans want, Tracy.
Yeah, right. Who was it? Did you tell me, did you read a story or one of the Horn listeners who actually went out and tried to pick, you know, work in the fields? And
yeah, like, I remember that note.
And it's like, no. Can't do it. Couldn't hang with it. Hell, I couldn't do it. I'm how many generations removed from picking cotton? Actually, not that many, if you really want to think about it.
But no, I'm two generations removed from a woman who was born in 1894. Three generations removed from her father, who was born in 1860, and four generations removed from his father and mother, who were born in 1840, so I'd say you're probably about 3-4 generations.
Right.
Maybe, you know, five tops.
Tops.
I mean, we're talking about great-great-grandparents.
Right.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Great-great-great, in my case.
Well, I got to observe, Tracy, from the sound of things, it sounds like there are no noise ordinances on mufflers in L.A.,
No, like I said, if it sounds terrible, I apologize.
No, it's not that it sounds terrible. It's just that I hear vehicles going by you out on the 12 3/4 that sound like, you know, around here where we don't have any, you know, where it's kind of lawless where those sort of things are concerned.
I'm on the street now, so I got off the freeway because the freeway is backed up. So and anybody that's listening, I'm on Artesia about to. Wait, I'm in Torrance going down Artesia trying to get on the 91. There's just so many different ways I can get around L.A. But it's just, you know, when I hear about, you know, make America great again, make America white again, America was never white. People seem to forget about the Aboriginal people that were here first, who saved the damn pilgrims' asses for freezing and starving to death. And how do they repay them? Let's just kill them off and steal their land.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like the irony, because my son is so funny. As many times as I've gone, he's like, you do understand the irony that we're going to an Indian reservation on Thanksgiving, right? And I'm like, oh, wow.
Well, you know, if you lose at the tables, just think of it as a little bit of expiation.
Right, exactly. It's just reparations, you know.
Hey, if you're gonna get your clock cleaned in a casino, it's better to get it cleaned in an Indian casino than letting Sheldon Adelson have it so he can turn around and give it to Trump.
Right, exactly. You know, at least I'm supporting a tribe or two, because in San Diego there's like eight Indian casinos just in San Diego County alone. From what I understand, it's like there's more Indian casinos in San Diego County than there is in the rest of the country.
No casinos in L.A.?
We have what they call card clubs, where you can play, you know, poker and blackjacks and pike out and baccarat, but there's no slot machines. So the only places in California that you can have slot machines is on an Indian reservation. Because Vegas and their lobbyists. And, you know, they fought hard. You know, Indian casinos from not being able to get the slot machines, because that's where the money is. You know, I can sit on a slot machine for hours, and I have. I lost my tickets on the tables, but I can't thank God for slot machines and bonuses. So I didn't lose everything, but I mean I came back, so I broke even. So I rather at least I came up, you know, I had about $100, but it wasn't easy. It was hard. But it's like you said, if I'm gonna lose money, at least I'm losing it in an Indian casino, because it's like you said, that asshole in Vegas that, you know, the big. And see, this is why when people say that the people who voted for Trump didn't realize how bad he is, I can't believe that, because you know why? There's too many resources. There's the media, you know, like you said, how many billions of dollars of free press did Trump get in the last year?
No, like $3 billion or so, yeah.
$3 billion. So even, you know, even if you never had the internet or anything like that, you have a TV. And even if you don't, you know somebody that has the internet and somebody that has a television that is of a like mind with you, who believes the same way you do, and they've told you about Trump. So I can't believe. I used to want to feel bad for people, like the carrier people, because really now it's down to how many jobs are actually going to stay here now.
Yeah, most of them are going to be automated.
Uh-huh. So now we went from, he was going to save all 2,000 jobs to 1,000 jobs, and it's less than that now, right? Like, is it down to like 700 jobs are actually going to be still here?
Yeah, it's not that much. And, you know, and the cost, the $7 million over 10 years, is going to be paid by, you know, Walmart workers and McDonald's fry cooks in Indiana.
Right. So it's like, I'm sorry, I can't feel bad for people who voted for Trump. I'm not giving you the courtesy of buyer's remorse. I am not, because it's not like all of a sudden this came up that he was a misogynistic, racist asshole, bully, cock-sucking, dick-waddle bastard. Oh,
don't hold back, Tracy. Well, I got to let you know, you got fan mail.
Uh-oh.
I got a note from Jen in Australia. She said, I hang out with a very Christian psychiatrist. Hanging out with the piously religious, she has two housemates of the same ilk, is me being way out of mine. It sure ain't common ground. It's a pity she's not Tracy's kind of introspective Christian, genuinely self-reflective with a goal of peace on earth in our time. Stretch, my nickname for her, because she's too tall and Stretch is the opposite of shrink, said something similar to what Tracy said not long after November 9th. By the way, I'm impressed how quickly Tracy processed through from denial to acceptance. Clearly, she's cut out for counseling. Paraphrasing, I recall she talked with you, Bob, about her resolve to not get mired in negative turning focus on her studies, get certified, and go to work helping others. Kudos for that. Anyway, Stretch made a suggestion very similar to Tracy's resolution. She said it is best to not attempt processing everything all at once in the way that dangerously dehydrated people need water but mistake small sips. Traumatized people must process only small things. Start with what makes sense. Please let Tracy know that she's part of the sense that's getting me through all this.
See, it's stuff like that that makes me know that I need to finish school. Because it's like you know, I think I said it, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Yeah, you can't take it in one gulp.
You can't, and it's, you know, I, and let's face it, there's times where I kind of backslide and get into that ball of, you know, that ball of confusion, destruction, and I just want to just curl up in the fetal position, but I can't. There's too much work to do. There's, have you heard, there's this book that I just bought that is amazing. is called This Is an Uprising. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's called This Is an Uprising, How Nonviolent Revolt is Shaping the 21st Century. And I suggest that it's by Mark and Paul Engler, Engler. Make a note, Horn family, to read this book, because it talks about the things that we want to do, how we can form a resistance. It talks about Black Lives Matter and Arab Spring, and how, even though the media is saying that these are haphazard, non-leader-centered, you know, no shape, form, or fashion of anything, they know what they're doing. And it's just, I've gone through the first three or four chapters, and I'm engrossed. And this is how good the book is, Bob. When Michelle Alexander, who is, you know, my shero, for those of you who don't know, wrote, you know, The Warmth of Other Suns, her comment on this book was, for all those who dare to dream that truly transformational, even revolutionary change might be possible here in America in our lifetimes, but who, and it's in parentheses, but who wonder what strategies or tactics could possibly achieve a monumental shift in consciousness, close parentheses. This book is for you. We have more power than we realize, and the compelling stories of nonviolent movements around the world told here have much to teach us about how we can use our powers wisely. I'm sorry, Miss Alexander wrote The New Jim Crow.
The single best example going right now is happening out on the high plains of North Dakota.
Exactly.
I don't have it in front of me, but there was a press release issued today telling people who feel like they need to go home to go home, and telling others, if you want to come, understand how brutal this is going to be, and we need your energy, we need your strength, but we need you to come here and work every day. And work and listen to the people who have been living through these winters for 10,000 years.
Exactly. And I love my white folks when they want to come and help. But the problem is, they want to do things their way. And it's like, no. You have to listen to the people that are already in the struggle. We know what we're doing. We want your help. We love your help. But you gotta come to, you can't come and try to do things your way. And like you said, you have to be, it's so funny. I was just talking to somebody about the Dakota, you know, North Dakota or South Dakota?
North Dakota.
In North Dakota. And I was just talking about how I couldn't go. Even if I had the means financially to go and work, I don't do So the only thing that I can do is help them financially, which I have done. You know, send blankets, send medical supplies, send bags.
Hold off on the blankets.
Yeah. We got a whole, what we're talking about, because of, you know, the last time some blankets got sent to a bunch of Indian.
Yeah, there's a long memory there.
Hey, you know what? And like I tell people, cellular memory is no joke. I can't wear chokers around my neck. And I couldn't understand why I would get so just unhinged. Not so much unhinged, but I just had this cold chill and just weird feeling whenever I had something close on my neck or something too tight on my wrist. And then I started taking Black history classes. I did not understand why. I understood about the nooses and the shackles around people's necks and the shackles around my legs and my ankles and my wrist. Even though these things never physically happened to me, they're manifestations of what I am. And cellular memory is real. Generational memory is real. So when you say, what I love about our Horn family is that when you said, hold off on the blankets, everybody, I don't like assuming, because a lot of times that people say stuff and assume that just because, you know, I'm a foreign listener, I know what you're talking about. But I'm pretty sure that most of our foreign family knows that when you say blankets and native dwellers, you're thinking smallpox and how you just wiped out, which, you know, a whole genocide. Blankets equal genocide, unless they bought their blankets themselves. So I can understand how somebody would not send me any blankets, because I don't know what's Facebook could possibly be in. Not that there would be anything, but why should I take that chance? And that's the world we live in. That is, this. We live in a world where, well, now a country, where people have been here before and will be here since, don't matter. We have become disposable. We don't matter. But I'm here to tell you, I matter. The people in the Dakotas matter. The brothers, my brothers and sisters, my brown brothers and sisters in East LA, my Chicano brothers and sisters, they matter. My folks matter. My Asian brothers and sisters matter. And this country is not just white people, because I'm pretty sure, and help me with the numbers, because you and I both suck with numbers. But if you added up all the people of color in this country, would we or would we not outnumber white folks?
I don't know about the numbers there, but suffice to say, it took a whole lot of white colonialism for white folks to outnumber the in the South, black people and Indians, and the further. But then again, you got to remember that somewhere around 100 million people were killed. Between 20 and 100 million people were killed in the colonial genocide from 1492 to, say, what, 1900?
Yeah.
And I don't even know if we've got any kind of firm idea of the numbers of people lost in the Middle Passage being brought to America, the number of people. I mean, the life expectancy of a slave in the South was brutally short.
Well, because, well, hell, you can just breed some more. What's the problem, Bob?
Yeah, okay.
You know, this is these things, you know, when I cringe, when I hear, you know, the fact that I didn't know anything about my history, my true history of this country, until I went back to school in my 30s. So we got 20 years. Well, let's see, now more than 20 years. When did you start school? When you're five?
Six. I started when I was six.
So that was a quarter of a century, Bob, of misinformation. That's not easily undone. You know what I'm saying?
No, and by the time you're old enough that certain information has set, as it were, in your being, it's awfully hard to turn that around and to relearn it. And you have to have, people have to be willing to engage in critical thinking to even remotely be able to do that.
That's why you
wind up with Trumpansies. Whatever they learned 30 years ago is that's the last time they were learning.
The last time.
Yeah. Ever since then, it's been little more than confirmation bias. I mean, just to give you an idea, I was thinking about Chicken Noodle News earlier today.
Why?
Because they had Bro Fro Mix, you know,
no.
Rick Sanctum Santorum on a panel. And, you know, there's no news out there about Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum isn't newsworthy. He's not a newsmaker. He's just a has-been right-wing gas bag and fetus fondler.
Yep.
So he shows up on, because somebody booked him yesterday on CNN. And he told a dreamer, a woman named Elizabeth Vilches, who was brought to the United States when she was 7 years old, and she was talking about not being want to be shipped out of the only country she's ever known.
What did he say?
And he told her, my final point is that you have the ability to go to any other country right now and apply those wares and be successful and reapply and come back to America. He told her to get out of the country.
Country that she's only, that she's been here.
The only country she's ever known.
Ever known.
And the response was pretty swift, but what it got me thinking about is, you know, that's not news.
No.
He was just brought on to the for-profit media to be a dick.
Yep.
Because that's all he knows how to do is be a dick. And so, what, you know, and I'm sure this has been analyzed to death, but it was a glaring example of the fact that Chicken Noodle News is not in the news business, they're in the opinion business. Yep. Just like Fox News. Just like the rest of them. There's very little hard, actual journalism taking place, because it's hard to put journalism in a 1 minute and 28 second video package.
Exactly.
Reporting live from Capitol Hill, I'm Bud Dumbfuck. That takes 10 seconds. So now you're down to 118. And so all they're doing, you know, okay, so you've got an obviously sympathetic woman there that people like you and me, we listen to her story and say, well, hell yeah, she's as American as anybody. And so CNN has that demographic covered. So they feel like, in order to make sure that they're selling Wonder Bread to everybody and not just one section of the country, they got to make sure they bring a dick on who will say, you know, you need to leave and go to some other country and apply and come back here the right way, honey.
And that's not
news. That's not informing the public. That exists in that space only to provide confirmation bias for bigots so that they'll stay tuned in and hopefully buy what CNN has taken money to advertise, whether it's Buy Gold Now or the railroad or America's Clean Coal Energy Authority or any of that, and just make sure that they're fed that message.
Well, and see, aren't you proud of me? I remember a few years back. Oh, well, shit, I can't remember yesterday. I apologize. No, I did not just ask you to remember a few years back. And I
know a few things that happened a few years back.
Yeah, you're better than me because you're good with stuff like that. Like I said, the memory of special needs of me, but I'm sorry. But I said something about something, and I said, there is no such thing as clean coal. And you're like, atta girl. Because, see, here's the thing, Bob. Until I started listening to your show, I was bamboozled. I thought there was such a thing as clean coal. And I thought, you know, because you know why? Because they said it on the talking thing in my house that has a screen and bright and vibrant colors. And they said, our president said, there's, you know, clean coal and clean diesel. No such thing as either.
Oh, and by the way, the woman that he told to leave Merca, she's an engineer. She is a degreed engineer. But, you know, Merca don't need her. Merca only needs white Trump-voting engineers.
Do you really
really think? Oh yeah, there. Yeah, because there were some people. Yeah.
But Tracy, I got to roll out of here and clear a little space for other people that want to yell in or whatever. Be very careful going home. Is there any leftover cake?
Oh yeah, there's plenty of cake, and there's plenty of chili. Did I tell you that I have a question. And then on your chili eating now, do you just eat straight chili or do you put it over rice?
No, it's got beans in it. It doesn't need rice.
But see, that's I have to have rice with my chili.
In Cincinnati, they flavor their chili with cinnamon and throw it over spaghetti and put cheddar cheese on top of it.
Well, see, what I do, I do it over rice with cheddar cheese and onions, or Mexican blend cheese, with onion, sour cream, and salsa. So I don't know if that's it. Well, I figured...
No, I like some shilly shally and frou frou on top of it. I love some cheddar cheese. I love some... I love a dollop of sour cream, maybe some fresh green onions, maybe some freshly diced cilantro. But nah, no rice underneath. At that point in time, blood glucose is gonna go to the moon.
But see, I think I figured out. It was so funny because I was like, "Why do?" Because Jan doesn't like it with rice.
Well, Jen just chimed in and said, "Chili, cornbread."
Oh, I made cornbread muffins. I forgot. I made muffins. But I figured out, and I figured out why we used to have rice with our chili. Because rice is the great stretcher outer.
Oh, yes, it is.
And growing up, you know, shaking cans to see if it's dog, you know, cans with no labels to see if it's dog food or fruit and stuff. When we actually had enough, you know, we always have plenty of rice because the stepfather molester would bring home bags of open rice. So we always had plenty of rice. So now, and as I'm seriously, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. No wonder we would eat rice with our chili. It would stretch the chili out. You can have more, you know, it would go a lot further if you were mixing the chili with the rice. And that's with everything, chili rice and red beans and rice. And all that other stuff. So now I know. So anyway, I'm going to throw in a $20 challenge. No, $25 challenge before I go. So there's that. So just that's it. And, you know, good night, folks. Love you. Thank you for the fan mail. It really makes me feel that I'm actually doing some good.
Oh, so you get a lot of it. There's a lot of love for you out there, Tracy. You have a lovely evening. You hear?
You too, my love. Good night.
Bye now. From out in the wilds of the 17 and two-thirds, that's Tracy, the lady cab driver. Let's see. Check in on a couple of notes here. Oh, by the way, thanks very much to Kitty in Boston. Had a note from... I just love when I get things. Kitty in Boston said, I'm answering Ron's challenge too, and thanks for turning me on to llamas with hats. Holy crap, totally fucked up and wrong. I love it. And with lots of little laughing, crying emoticons, Kitty from Boston. So fundraising goal just got answered, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa. So that means we just went down to $120 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you very, very much, Brother Deacon Asa. Subject line, dopes. Yeah, hiccup in the stream. Don't know why. There we go. All better now. A couple of observations. One coming from Arthur, who knows the lay of the land here. As far as the dreamer needing to leave and reapply, it only took 9 years from the time I applied until my immigrant visa was ready, assuming she'll be eligible after deportation. Probably not. Immigrating to the U.S. legally is hard. Well, it kind of depends on who you are. It's not so hard for others. You know what I mean. Right. Yeah, hopefully the stream has settled back down now. Again, thanks to Brother Deacon Asa for immediately answering Tracy's challenge. We've got $120 in fundraising to go. Note from Steve, subject line, dopes. Oh, and for a little perspective, why put a retired warrior in the Department of Homeland Security, where all the previous Department of Homeland Security heads have been lawyers? Because it's real legally over there. Well, Big Pharma is about to get a large chunk of $6.3 billion going out to the National Institutes of Health and FDA, among other things, for some very useful research. And yes, the speeding up and approving of new kinds of dope, medication. Of course, the GOPs are behind it big time. And the drug dealers at the big pill factories are sharpening their knives for another slop load of we the people's money. But get this. We're going to try and stop the opioid epidemic that's plaguing the country, too. Not with new jobs or education or some combination of faith, hope, charity, and all that humanitarian bullshit. Nope. We're going to start some other kind of war, round up these poor, straggling, misfit, dope fiend bastards and straighten them out and get their heads back on right. Because it's always their fault, the ignorant fucks. Not anyone else's. But we need to have a homeland protector for all that and turn it into more safety for the people, since it's always best to mix up the cops and the guns and the sick people and the legal dope and the illegal dope with the money that goes with it. Except for those losers who don't ever have it, of course. Which is we the people. Thank God, though, we're also going to have all sorts of bright, shiny new pills for sale and a way to fast-track the new shit and get it into the nervous systems of your unruly, stressed children. But real health care? Real solutions and better lives and things worth living for? Fuck, dude. What kind of shit are you smoking? Well, it ain't me. Because I kind of see it the same way. Why put the general into Homeland Security? Asked Jennifer. Because Tom Cotton is feverishly trying to make waterboarding into not torture. And then it'll be turned on we the peeps. Ain't that going to be grand? Fun times coming, people. Fun times. 22 minutes before the hour, let's check in. Let's check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Yeah. Speaking of stressed, unruly children, I guess I'm your favorite one. Me and Punky are your two favorite ones.
Are you stressed? Are you feeling unruly?
No, hell, if I was any
more relaxed.
I mean,
is Punky pecking at the back of your head?
No, we're fine. We're both fine.
Because Punky's not really a pecking. He's got one of those seed-eating bills, doesn't he? Or is he curved kind of fruity?
He has been known to bite.
Ah. Well, yeah, a cockatiel. Yeah, sure.
But, anyway. I want to thank Tracy for giving me an opportunity here to make both Tracy and Jules correct. Okay?
Okay.
And you'll love this.
This ought to be fun. Is there a Gordian knot involved?
This is perfect truthful as well.
Damn it,
Spock. Okay, one of the many good things that Tracy mentioned during the course of her call just now was the detrimental effect of a quarter century of false or misleading or totally erroneous information. Okay. And she own life in terms of the stuff that she didn't know about her own history and about our history. Okay. And it dawned on me in an instant. All that was missing was the light bulb flashing over my head when she said that Jules is right in the sense that a good number of Trump voters were not aware of his nonsense. And Tracy is also Trump's voters were fully aware of what he was up to. And here's how they are both being right. It has been about 25 years since right-wing radio talkers like Rush Limbaugh and some others, Rush Limbaugh wannabes, have been dominating the airwaves from coast to coast. Okay? And if there's a large number of people whose misinformation is from informational, so-called, like Limbaugh's, Limbaugh wannabes, that's very possibly all that they know. And even if Trump parrots or echoes a lot of those same kinds of talking points, they don't know any better, in the sense that for 25 years, they too have been victimized by false or misleading information. You know, it's like that old computer thing, garbage in, garbage out. So that's how Tracy and Jules both are absolutely correct. A fair number of Trump voters were unaware of his shenanigans, and a fair number of Trump voters were fully aware of his shenanigans. Does that make sense, or am I stretching it?
No. Well, the ones who were unaware, Scott, I've got a problem with that. I mean, this is when I talk about where I live. Okay. I don't know how many times I've told the story of, well, you know, I had to go down for cheap blood work Tuesday or whatever, and I walk into the doctor's office and Fox News is on.
Yeah.
Or let's say I'm over getting my oil changed and I walk into the waiting area. You want to say the next line? Fox News is on.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
And it is damn sure on in homes all over the place here. And I've had conversations. I remember one in particular because it remains so deeply disturbing to me. Running into a woman who is special to this family because she has been good and kind and decent. And I did not initiate the conversation, Scott. She walked up to me in the grocery store, greeted me warmly, and said, "And are you going to vote for Trump? Do you think he'll win?" And using the language of the area, I said, "Ma'am, I sure hope not. Our country can't afford it." That man's awful. That man's awful. I mean, did you hear him say what he said about women? And she said, "Yeah, but I just kind of like him." And I didn't foam at the mouth or anything or start screaming obscenities or because I was stunned. This isn't some woman who just, you know, lives up a holler and you know, breathes coal dust. She's educated, she's degreed. And so she in that moment admitted she knew what had been said about him. But she just kind of likes him. And then she followed and said, "But that Hillary."
So she was willingly unaware or not even...
No, she was aware. Scott, she was aware.
Of what?
She knew what he had said. You know, grab him.
That's not what I was going to say. She was willfully unaware of there being an alternative or an alternate reality to be applied when it comes to anything that he said, virtually anything. If she's degreed, she ought to be bright enough to know that what one person says, or even a small group of people say, does not necessarily link up accurately with reality or the greater reality. I was talking.
See, I see it far more simply than that, Scott.
Yeah.
She knew it. She heard it. She didn't care. She was okay with it.
Okay, well, that's another.
She was okay. She was okay problem. Enough with it to go and vote for him.
Yeah.
I just don't think there are. I mean, you brought up Limbaugh, and you brought up the effect of 25 years of hate radio broadcasting in 1611. 01, 91, yeah. The first time I ever heard Rush Limbaugh was during a summer job in 1990. And the receptionist at the front desk had him on every day from noon to 3 on a little radio that sat at her reception desk. And I would go, who is this clown? Okay, now, this is 1990, Scott. Not 1990 in New York, not 1990 in L.A. or San Francisco or Chicago. This is 1990 in Charleston, West Virginia. So in 1990 in Charleston, West Virginia, he was already having his impact. And, of course, in 1990 in Charleston, West Virginia, there was nowhere you could turn on the radio dial and hear an alternate version of events.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Bob. I'm agreeing with you in the sense that a lot of people who voted for Trump or who didn't like Hillary, take either one, got to that point of view, many of them, I'd say maybe at least half of them, simply because or partially because they, for 25 years, for a fucking quarter century, have been fed a steady diet of stuff that doesn't hook up accurately with reality.
Well, I think you're right, and I think that also that is also connected to the fact that for 25 years our side decided we would just abandon the playing field, that we'd abandon the field of combat, if you will, to get all eliminationist on us.
Yeah,
and that we would let them have it all, and they could just preach, and we would be above it all. And so you eventually down this continuum, you get to a point where they say things like, well, where, you know, one of the ditto monkeys will say something like, well, we got Limbaugh and y'all got National Public Radio. Because there's a one-to-one correlation between Rush Limbaugh babbling through some opioid haze into a microphone and some deadly dull classical music playing at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on West Virginia Public Radio.
Yeah. And please understand, Bob, and the fun lovers and truth seekers out there in radio land, what I said previously is not to let anybody off the hook, not the right-wing radio and TV talkers, and not the people who foolishly voted for Donald J. Trump. This is just to kick our empathy gene into gear, our compassionate and understanding gene into gear, so that we see you can't fix a problem unless you have a sense of what created the problem. And what I described earlier is a goodly chunk of why we find ourselves where we find ourselves tonight. And like I say, I'm not letting anybody off the hook, up to and including me, because looking back on it, let's face it, I, like many millions of other voters in America, were not all gaga over Hillary, okay? We wanted Bernie, and we didn't get Bernie. And we voted for her anyway, because Bernie said do that.
Yeah.
And we knew that it was better than any of the third-party people or Trump.
So, let me ask you, Scott,
I didn't do as much as I could have done to help in the areas where she was deficient in terms of raw vote or electoral votes.
Well, I appreciate your introspection on that, Scott, but you're in San Diego, my friend. There wasn't a lot more for you to do.
No, but there was stuff to be done in support of what she was up to, as flawed as she might have been, or as second choice as she might have been from my point of view.
Yeah, but you were on the air here night I don't mean night after night, but on numerous occasions talking about, you know, it is important that she be elected president. You said all the right things. You said all the true things.
But who the ears that message fell on, as positive as it could have ever been, were the message did not fall in the places where it most needed to be applied. That's what I'm saying.
Well, and to that extent, Scott, I think we were defeated by a very, very sophisticated, and I don't mean in terms of the popular vote, goddamn, 2.6 million votes. Come on.
I know.
But we were defeated by a very sophisticated opposition. wasn't even on American shores. The thing, news thing. So, well, I mean, this being prayer meeting Wednesday, you know, mostly prayer meeting Wednesday stories are stories, goofy stories about religion. And God knows the Roman Catholic Church has enough problems to keep it busy until the second coming of Christ, just solving the ones that their own self-inflicted wounds and the wounds they've inflicted on others. But Pope Frank really delivered a broadside. He went on the he gave an interview to the Belgian Catholic weekly Tertio. Among other things, he said it's a sin to defame people. And he advised journalists and the media to beware of falling into, and this is the word he used, Scott, coprophilia, shit eaters. The Pope told the media to stop being shit eaters and spreading fake news. I mean, it's like what we were talking about with that Ohio Union Democratic family that Van Jones interviewed. He said he voted for Trump for change, but by God, he was right there, Johnny, on the spot, talking about how that Hillary acid washed her hard drive, and that proved to me the minute that I heard it that she was guilty. Wrong accent, of course, but you get the idea.
Yeah, I do.
Hillary, and there's cold comfort in having been right about all of this, Scott. There's no comfort in it at all. But she was a terrible candidate. She was a terrible candidate during the primaries. She was a terrible candidate during the general election. You know, when she turned that her baleful glaze on Bernie and said, "I don't like your tone." You know, goddamn. It's Harry Truman time. If you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen.
Yeah.
But the thing is, no matter how uninspiring she was, and you know, I know there are still some people out there, "I'm with her. Yeah, I want the first woman president." And I understand it. It doesn't mean the same thing to me, just like, well, I can't want a first man president because, you know what I want? I want the first atheist president or the first non-believer president. Then maybe I'll have that same feeling that women had for Hillary or people of color had for Barack Obama.
I'm wondering if it's appropriate for me to say amen in response to your comment.
Well, yeah, so be it. I mean, it's just a foreign word.
I know. Well, another thing that Tracy said that also gave me a little bit of hope and probably should give others hope as well is she mentioned a book that she's reading about discovering one's own power that you may have had, but just didn't get that you had. Okay. We've got a lot of power even with everything that's happened so far. We can still participate because we each have two senators and one representative. And even if our message to them as to what to do next falls on deaf ears or unresponsive ears, a lot of the messages will get through because we'll be speaking to people who already pretty much agree with us. But even for those who don't, who send the message and it goes nowhere and has no effect, there is still something to be said for participating, okay, just to make your voice known and your presence known and your voice heard. So, you know, we've got more power than we sometimes realize, and that'll show up in the confirmation hearings for some of these cockamamie nominees that Trump is putting up there. Granted, the Republicans have the majority in the Senate. Well, that's fine. If a lot of people let them know that we as voters find these nominees as unacceptable or unqualified or maybe a little of both, that will have an effect, hopefully the best possible effect. But no matter what effect it has, they will still be informed which is more than I can say for a lot of the Trump voters.
Well, yeah, and you know, Terrace just wrote in and said, I didn't vote for Hillary because Bernie or Bob told me to. I voted for her because she would have been better for the country than Donald Dump. And I'd say there's a whole lot of people who voted that way. And
yeah.
But she was up against forces that were beyond her control and that were beyond our control. Again, I reiterate, she was the victim of a sophisticated psyops program that did not originate on American shores.
Well, yes, there was a lot of bad players in this scenario, and that was just one of them.
But that was a big one. And again, the Ohio guy who said, what was it? He said, you know, her slogan was, I'm with her. But Trump told us he was with us. Well, shit, that's a soundbite right out of a Trump rally, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, so dude was getting information. It's not like he was just blissfully ignorant of what Trump was doing. It's like Brother Deacon Asa says. They knew it, the Trumpansies, and they approved it. And maybe that's the sort of philosophical thing that we're having a hard time getting around it. That old legal maxim that silence is acceptance. They accepted it. All the nasty things that Trump was proven beyond a reasonable doubt to be, they heard it. They took it into themselves. And they accepted it because within their worldview, there were factors they thought were better. Now, I make the argument, Scott, that one of the factors was that they wanted a white ascendancy. I agree with Van Jones on the concept of white lash. This was punishment of an entire country by a butthurt plurality for having had the temerity to have a black president for 8 years. They weren't just going to get a white president. They were going to get a white, male, privileged president who was the antithesis of everything that they thought had been forced upon them for the last 8 years, like, you know, considering people of color to be every bit as good as them. And that's what becomes so deeply disturbing for me. Because everything that is being done in terms of setting up his incoming government is some sort of a dog whistle, one or another, to his butthurt white electorate. And they are still butthurt. And the question that remains, and we got to get out of here because we're out of time, the question that remains is what will happen when he is proven to be not just Time Magazine's Man of the Year, but when he is proven to be a compulsive, pathological, complete and total liar. What happens when the offshore jobs don't come back? He thinks he's going to strong-arm Apple into building iPhones in Terre Haute or something.
Well, real quick, I'll tell you exactly what will happen to those folks. They will be butthurt for real. Up till now, they've had an imaginary butthurt. They have not had butthurt yet. And that's the best I got.
And that may be the best, the nearest thing to a decent outcome. But I'm not at all convinced, Scott, that we're going to be okay.
Well, yeah, you are right about that. But we will be what we'll be, and we'll work with it.
But if the new normal is for the stock market to go just sprayed roach crazy and just go up like a bottle rocket, while middle America continues to struggle, economic inequality and all of that, then we may be on the way because, you know, it went through the ceiling again today. Wall Street is doing everything short of masturbating in the streets over Trump.
Well, the bulls and the bears are dancing together.
And even that has an element of there's a fiddler's fee out there to be paid.
Well, of course.
And of course, once again, Wall Street won't pay it. We will, because it's brutal capitalism for us, gentle, loving socialism for our betters on Wall Street, the traders and the managers and the hedge fund managers and the Goldman Sachs employees. You think Steve Mnuchin is going to come into the Treasury and say, oh, well, boys, there's a new sheriff in town. We were buddies once upon a time, but I'm going to bust out all Thomas A. Becket on your ass. Ain't going to happen. But anyway, got to get out of here because I've seriously overshot the end of the program. Scott, good to hear from you. Tell Punky not to be so quiet next time.
Okay, Bob, take care, and good night to all the fun lovers and truth seekers out there. Be hopeful, if nothing else.
All we got in common is our misery. Least we can do is share it. You take care,
exactly.
Scott. Bye.
All right.
So that's the end of things. Really do got to get out of here. Thanks, Joyce, for jumping in. Joyce in Washington, thank you for jumping in here at the very end and almost entirely wiping out fundraising for the evening. There's a little bit left. Not a whole lot, and we'll just deal with it tomorrow, I hope. Or maybe the subscribers will knock it out overnight, which would be cool. We still need new subscribers. And remember, every new subscription between now and the 15th of the month gets doubled, courtesy of Joan in Taliban, Indiana. Thank you, Joan. Thank you, everybody. Remember, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. And by the way, sending get well wishes to Dr. Bill O'Brien. He's been under the weather for the past few days and has thus taken the week off. He hopes to be back next Monday. Get well soon, Dr. Bill. We love you. Good night, everybody.